Today's episode is brought to you by Kevel, the API-first SaaS solution proudly ushering in the retail media renaissance with their groundbreaking Retail Media Cloud. If you're sick of sharing your revenue or unimpressed by current black box solutions, there is another way, and we're not talking about building from scratch or going it alone. Kevel can help you optimize your on-site sponsored listings and boost your ROI. Help your retail media platform stand out with captivating user experiences. And best of all, you maintain full control of your data with our zero-touch data processing. The flexibility of Kevel's Retail Media Cloud is the solution built for you. To learn more, go to kevel.com/listen. That's kevel.com/listen. Welcome to Marketecture, where you can get smart fast with in-depth interviews of leading technology executives. I'm Ari Paparo. I am joined today by Harry Kargman, the founder and CEO of Cargo. Harry, thank you for being here.
Love being here. It's always exciting to record something interesting and fun with you.
Yeah, and you have a great background. It's not a fake background. People watching this on video probably think you have a Zoom background. No, that's actually the view outside your office.
That is. We're right here on Broadway. Hopefully you won't hear the ambulances or the, I guess there's a lot of protests right now in Union Square marching down Broadway. So hopefully that won't disrupt it. Good news is it's raining out. So hopefully nobody shows up.
And actually, I'm actually in the building behind you, but I don't have a window behind me.
That's so funny. So why are we doing this together? We're actually doing
because,
this over...
Yeah, then you need a studio and you need two microphones and we're just, you know, lo-fi operation.
Love it.
So Cargo's been around for a really long time. Tell me, how long has it been around? How big is the company? You're private, but quite big, right?
Founded the company in 2003. So this is our 21st year. We actually had a huge, splashy, very fun 20th anniversary party, which is a real party, not an industry party, but nice. Like a blowout party in December of last year. Company is privately held. Actually, we have no outside investors. We have 600 folks. We are multinational at this point, offices across North America. We have an engineering office in Waterford through our acquisition of Stitcher Ads, which is now Cargo Commerce, which we're going to talk about. London, throughout EMEA, Europe, and then a relatively large office in Sydney, Australia. And we're also in Singapore and India and a few other places.
That's great. Is the name based on your last name?
It's Cargo. It is, Cargo. But I didn't name it, which is, I think that's the misnomer, is it was actually my friend Rick Fulop's wife, Jane, who actually named the company. But we were called Rise Line in actually the late 90s, early 2000s, and then changed to Cargo. Cargo 1.0 failed, and then we had to sort of restart the company in 2003. So it's right. All the lessons of being an entrepreneur and actually going through a bunch of failures before sort of achieving liftoff.
Shout out to Jane. So Cargo is a little bit of a confusing company. Is it an SSP? Is it an ad network? Is it a creative services company? What is it? What is Cargo?
Yeah, I think you bring up a thing that's actually trailed us, haunted us, challenged us throughout the years in terms of trying to put us into a box, like a single box. And I think the challenge with a box is that box never really stays rigid. If you even look at the trade desk today, they're trying to actually deprecate a lot of the work they're doing with SSPs and go direct to publisher. And so are they a DSP or are they now an ad network, a data company, or all the rest? So if you really look at boxes, boxes are hard to stay within. I would say that Cargo has been almost uniformly true to sort of a statement, which we call putting ART, which is an advertising, into ad tech, putting art into ad tech. And really, when I think about creative, it's about creative performance. We call that creative science. The idea very simply is, how do you build a company? Whether it's an SSP, I wouldn't call us an ad network, but we did qualify for that. But how do you actually run at scale? And when I say at scale is, you're integrated into a very large number of publishers with formats that drive much better performance, targeting outside of sort of standard identity targeting around context and content that can decommoditize what you're doing. If you look at the ecosystem and the commodity stuff that's happening in the ecosystem, which is a lot of the larger players, they're trying to take IAB standard rectangles, put them in, find targeting, and then be in an auction and try to find the lowest possible price, looking at supply and demand across publishers and ad buyers and agencies. if you can actually drive a better product, meaning that it drives better performance and ROAS for the advertiser, because you're doing things that are truly unique, like, and that's truly what Cargo does, is we're building creative formats, not because we like pretty pictures and not because we paint by the numbers, but because we're looking at how do formats and creative actually drive higher click-through rates. Not that something that we think is the be-all end-all, but it certainly advertisers look at it as a driver of or an indicator of intent, or brand lift studies, whether it's ourselves or Kantar's, or whether it's even looking at offline and online conversions if we have conversion APIs. Those types of capabilities, when you put that on top of great supply, drives a different value proposition to the advertiser. And if you were to think about that as a company, that's who Cargo is. Cargo is driving these unique value propositions that drive better outcomes and performance because we're integrating into all these publishers at scale with something that is truly unique, differentiated. And in some cases, we even control that slot on the publisher itself.
Okay, so let's just break it down into pieces. So let's start publisher side. So you have an array of publishers. Are they all direct relationships?
All direct relationships. We never work through any third parties.
So you don't bid out on, you don't bid on third-party inventory when you have
never
demand?
No, I mean, I think just to qualify that, I think the question is, does Cafe Media, who runs a number of sites, some of the sites they own, some of the sites they don't own, is that considered direct or indirect? I've been in this debate before, but I think most people would look at Cafe Media as owning the inventory, and therefore we're bidding directly into the owners of the inventory because there is no other third-party way to actually get to that inventory other than the pipes that Cafe Media provides. But short of that, we're talking about all the largest publishers, NBC, CBS, Viacom, Scripps, Hearst, the largest publishers, and all of it is direct. We do not bid on any third-party SSP that then, you know, serves that through any publisher. So we're direct. And there was actually an article about this, and we're the only non-MFA SSP, meaning that we don't actually have any made-for-advertising sites underneath our umbrella.
So I was about to bring that up. So how do you know that? How can you prove that?
Well, we ourselves have and we've had it for, I would say, the last 15 years, 10 to 15 years, a publisher scorecard. So what we look at is, what is the time and attention that the site gets? How do we determine that? We use third parties like Moat to determine that, ISDV. We also have our tag on page. We can see what scroll velocity looks like. We can see where our ad shows up. Mm-hmm. And we can see what the rotation of the request of our ads that are called by the publisher itself. So if we see too high a frequency, not enough page views to connotate against that frequency, and we see sort of very low click rates because you're just slamming the page with advertising, that's going to score really low on our publisher scorecard. At one point in the company, we were turning down 9 out of every 10 publishers. Now those publishers don't even come to us anymore because they know that they're not going to get onboarded. So we've been very careful to curate using that publisher scorecard. And then we have third parties like Jounce who come along and say, yeah, we've looked at your site. We put a pixel on your site. We see what you're doing. We see who your publishers are. And they're using probably many of the same metrics that we're using and we've always used to score the quality of our publishers. And they're like, oh my God, if you look at the quality of the inventory and you're direct bidding into this large group of publishers, you don't have any made for advertising sites as we define it, which is sites that obviously have a high rotation and frequency of advertising, have low click rates, and don't have like true content providers, you know, curators and creators that are actually building those sites.
Right. Got it. And in terms of your integration with them, is there a special integration so that your creative formats can run, or are you bidding into standard IAB units?
No, that's the challenge with the business and the scalability of the business. Part of the reason why we don't have any MFA sites, or frankly, we don't have as large a reach as some of our competitors do, or a Magnite or PubMatic, is our integration requires us to either put code on page of publisher, which then requires a whole certification process, which is timely, and it's not as scalable as some of these other SSPs that just have to get integrated with the header bidder and they're off to the races. The second thing that it requires is some type of relationship where they turn off safe frames in their ad server to allow us to serve these formats. So if safe frames are turned on, it won't allow us to build or run any of these out-of-page formats.
Right. It's the old iframe file that you used to have to put on publisher sites.
Correct. And so if that file is on those sites, we could not run without cargo being whitelisted around that particular safeguard.
Right. So if you work with, like, if I was a new publisher and I came to you, I would have to do a little bit of work to make sure your ads work properly.
Yeah. And there's a whole, you know, we want to ensure on our side that if we're running our formats, it's going to look good. It's not going to have collisions or conflicts with existing other ad slots on the page. It has to be flawless because we're serving our advertisers and they don't want to see their ad overlaid with another ad overlaid with another ad that's like slammed onto right. the page that isn't. So again, that goes through our certification process and our publisher scorecard to ensure not only are we not putting our formats on the page in the right way and it doesn't run on the test pages in the right way, but we have to ensure on top of that that when we go to production, that there isn't other competitor products or other products on the page that would try to serve at the same time that we're serving and then create sort of a subpar experience for the consumer as well as for the advertiser.
I've seen that problem. So you're giving me flashbacks to my rich media days. Let's talk about creative, so the next leg of the stool. I just saw a presentation you gave at a conference recently where you demonstrated a bunch of really interesting creative ideas. Do you want to walk us through some of the ways in which you are innovating in the creative space?
Yeah, so we're always looking for that, driving that performance out of creative. Again, we've coined that creative science. There's an entire measurement functionality around that. So the way that we think about creative is, one, can we provide an experience to an advertiser or marketer that they can't get anywhere else? One of those formats we call branded takeover. It's a really interesting interplay between the creative itself owning every ad slot on the page and having that to be integrated into the programmatic stack, which is used to having every ad slot being independently bidded on. You have to be integrated into the ad server to do it because you have to take a sponsorship line item. The publisher has to allow you to grab every slot on the page. And you have to think about, from a creativity perspective, what do you do with every slot and how do they integrate into each other to create, let's say, a sequential message? So it's a relatively complicated concept. But when you implement it, and you make the processes and workflows scalable, which we've done a pretty good job doing, what you get is what looks like a sponsorship of that page, but you get all the flavors and value of programmatic that comes along with it. So you can bring your LiveRamp audiences, you can put frequency capping on top, it can be Moat IS and DV measurable. So you get all the goodness that the ad tech industry has been able to build around measurement, brand safety, even sort of driving sort of the analytics around conversions. But to the consumer, you get this beautiful format that exists on the page. So that's one example. Right. But we have Venti Video on those mobile pages. And then in the CTV area, we did an acquisition of a company called VideoByte. And just like what we've done on mobile, we want to innovate how easy it is to build formats for CTV, whether they're overlays on top of existing programming where you can find the moment that's taking place in a show. So for example, we use the example Skittles. Wouldn't it be amazing if Skittles could look at all of the broadcasting programming on CTV and say, what is the Skittles moment? Skittles moment is a moment where kids are running around, having fun, being a little naughty. And on top of that, maybe they're a little irreverent, they're a little edgy, they're a little out there. Think about Taste the Rainbow, Skittles moments. Where do those moments occur? Well, I can name you three great examples. You're watching Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, and the kids walk into the Wonka land and they see the Oompa Loompas for the first time and you're like, whoa, what is going on? Wouldn't that be like a perfect Skittles overlay moment when you're walking into Willy Wonka and Wonka land? Same moment happens in Home Alone when he's laying all the traps for the robbers. A little irreverent, a little naughty, but really funny. Same moment happens when the kids riot and go against Arnold Schwarzenegger, who's in Kindergarten Cop. You can identify those moments across the entire landscape of TV shows and movies. And Skittles as a brand can own those moments identified using machine learning, object recognition, and sentiment to basically own those moments at scale. And that, I think, is super exciting when you think about the future of TV.
So how do you do that, though? I mean, so you bought this company that has sentiment analysis of video. How do you know in advance of the content playing when there's a Skittles moment, to use your phrase?
So the first time that Home Alone runs, you don't, because it's the first time that we see it. But that's one time to one household. The second time that same movie runs, because we've seen it in our system, we've created, call it an index of time slots, time moments throughout the film itself. Right. And those moments take place through a combination of object recognition. So we see it's a kid, we see it's a house, we see he's, you know, these are gumballs, traps, robbers falling down, this and that. We see at the same time, we crawl the closed captioning for the movie and we use just standard. It's actually pretty good natural language processing to identify the closed captioning of when certain scenes are taking place. And we always want to actually look at sentiment because there are certain moments that don't make a lot of sense. So for example, let's say it's State Farm and they sponsor the NFL and they like football and moments of winning and champions, and you're watching a movie and maybe it's Jerry Maguire or maybe it's Friday Night Lights. And in that moment where it's caught, but it's the opposite team that caught it and the team is about to lose, because obviously like every Rocky-like movie, it always starts out with a fight and the winner gets beaten up and then he has to go train and come back and be the victor the second time around. The key is to not show that in a moment where you're actually depressed or it's a negative moment, even though that football is caught. So making sure that we have the right sentiment, the right closed captioning signals, and the right object recognition to be able to pull that together. We create that index and then we serve that overlay creative format into those moments that take place across all the movies and TV shows that are indexed in our system.
Right. Because you are operating on the sell side, you have tags on the page or tags in the video players. So it's not an open web problem. It's a contained problem to analyze the content.
That's exactly right. And so it's only on the services that you're on. You have to do an integration. And again, that's the challenge, I would say, with our business model. And the business is we want to do these unique, amazing things. We want to build these non-commoditized products. We want to drive value. But the startup cost and the scalability is harder because it requires not just turning things on and being in market day one. It requires a little bit more time, thoughtfulness, and integration to basically make some of these things work. But we think the juice is worth the squeeze.
All right, let's good transition to start talking about the demand side. So on the buy side, how would I buy ads from Cargo if, let's say, I want to use a DSP. I want to be self-service and use a DSP. And then we'll talk managed in a moment.
Yeah, sure. So let's pick a customer. We'll call it, instead of using the term Amazon, we will call it Nile. So Nile is our customer. And Nile basically has a set of creatives that they've worked with. It's a brand book. Maybe they've built creatives for TV. Maybe they have creatives for their website. Maybe they built creatives for brochures or other elements. They will drop those creatives into a Dropbox folder. We actually have automated a lot of these processes, but just to sort of make it simple and easy for people to understand, we will take those elements. A human being will take those elements, but we've built actually a fair amount of tools and AI to automate picking up those elements and integrating. We prefer layered PSDs. And we will, as part of the proposal to them, let's say this is a private marketplace deal via any DSP called the Trade Desk or Google or Xandr or the others. We will actually build out those formats, those creatives into some of these non-standard but highly successful performance-oriented formats that we can run. So we'll build versioning of those using our tools. We have a studio team that's between here in New York and the Dominican Republic. And we will actually end up building those creatives either on our native creative platform or a number of other platforms that we integrate into. I think Sultra is one of them. There's a few others. Clinch, we've worked with a bunch of others. Depending upon what the advertiser is looking for, what kind of functionality and who they use and are selected as sort of their tools provider in the past. Because some of them want to keep those creatives in a repository to be used at a later date. And we give those creatives back at a certain volume of spend. So we build these formats. We then talk about curating a private marketplace deal on our side, where oftentimes the buyer, knowing that we have this super clean set of inventory rated, you know, the most premium, will say, hey, can you curate this PMP not to run across all of Cargo, but we want to actually cherry pick and identify, call it 30 sites or places that have a high propensity to our buyers. Again, we're talking about Nile, so it's a general market. They don't care about males or females, younger or older. But let's say we had a beauty brand, maybe they're going to be skewed toward younger females. We'll curate a set of inventory, and that I think is very valuable to them so that they actually have a higher concentration of audience with more sort of prestigious brands so that there's that brand association that runs into a private marketplace deal. And that private marketplace deal will show up inside of Trade Desk, Google, as I said, or any DSP of their choice. And then the trader can go and activate that deal by layering audiences on top, putting a budget against it, pacing against it. And on our side, we will curate that PMP. We'll add potentially certain contextual signals or contextual targeting on our side. It will be the better creative. And the nice thing about it is you put that whole thing together, the trader is bidding at effectively the same market rates as if they're running standard PMP creatives against an ad slot that exists on that buyer. So they're getting much better performance, much more highly curated inventory. And the pricing is really very reasonable because the competitor to that in the header bidder against that same slot potentially, which we're transforming, is just a standard crappy banner ad that is sold at typically a fraction of the value that we're driving to the advertiser.
So in this example, the creative, after it's been produced as part of the pre-sales process, you're taking the HTML and effectively cutting and pasting it into the Trade Desk.
Yeah, you're rendering a tag and you're putting that tag into the Trade Desk.
Is it always PMP or do you do PG also?
Yeah, we do PG and PMP. Typically, we do take open because of the quality of our inventory and they can just bid because we're directly integrated into the publisher. Mm-hmm. But that's, I don't even think that gets to 20% of our business. It's sub 20%.
Given there's quite a bit of workflow here and back and forth, what's kind of the entry level price? Like what sort of media commitment needs to be there for this?
Well, if it's a test, we can do a test around $25,000 or $30,000. But typically our larger customers, once they see the performance, they see the outcomes, our typical IO size is around 200. There's some that are higher, but probably our average size is about $200,000.
That's very helpful. And then on your website, you also talk about managed service. So can you give us like a little bit of a glimpse as to how that works and what sort of customers use it?
Yeah. So there's a lot of customers that use our managed service. And primarily because we're providing a capability that can't be traded programmatically.
Right.
So for example, if you want to trade on attention and not trade on a CPM, so we're willing to say, look, we'll charge per second of exposure time. If it's on screen and it flips off the screen and nobody really sees it, you don't pay us very much, if at all, for that. If it's on screen and they interact with it, they engage with it, and then they come to your site and they become a buyer, you're saying, hey, I really want to buy that, which is really what we call attention. It's sort of the Parsec acquisition that we made. There's no way to trade that inside of the Trade Desk because you're using a different currency. So that's a great example of you'd have to buy us on a managed service associated with that. We've built a ton of tech around contextual targeting, keywords on the page, and a combination of that, plus some proprietary things that we're doing with Neustar and LiveRamp to build a more highly performant set of targeting. And unfortunately, that data and targeting methodology wouldn't necessarily be available to buy using the Trade Desk, right? If you layered Trade Desk IDs, I'm just using Trade Desk as an example, but it could be Google, it could be Xandr, it could be any. You layer their targeting on top of what we're doing, which is essentially a black box like PMax is for Google or ASC is for Facebook, and you're saying, hey, I want to drive a certain outcome of performance. Let's say that performance, we call it qualified site visits. I want to drive the highest number of qualified site visits possible. Then you need to use our KMAX targeting black box. And that would be, we call it KMAX internally. We haven't named it that yet. But basically the idea is if you wanted to use that capability to drive a very specific outcome like qualified site visits, we would need to do that on a managed service basis because it would be pretty much impossible to trade that inside the trade desk. And then we have some formats that are proprietary that would be very difficult to trade inside of a DSP as well, like our social canvas formats, where we see, for example, if there's a social embed on the page of the publisher. Let's say you're reading an article about Tom Brady retiring from football, and it has his Instagram post in the middle of the page. We've actually built formats above and below his Instagram post, and you would want to trade that like social based upon keywords and the sentiment of the page itself, very much like how you buy a social post or a social interaction on Instagram. How do you go and buy that social canvas format programmatically and get all the value of all of the keyword targeting around, you know, that social post or embed that sits in the middle of the page?
Yeah, that's interesting. So another good transition, because the last topic I want to talk to you about on the product side is your commerce offering. So your website talks about integration with Pinterest, Snap, TikTok, others. So what is this offering?
That was a major departure from what Cargo is known for and does, which is high impact brand ads, primarily on the mobile device. Yes, we have desktop, but we're known for our mobile high impact. Really understanding that a lot of our customers were looking for a broader set of capabilities from Cargo. Because we've been around so long and we've built a good level of trust, I mean, one of the things that I think does differentiate Cargo is we have a massive sales force. We have over 100 people on our sales force. Actually, significantly, if you add in client services and some of the customer success folks, you're looking at almost 200 people in that organization touching and figuring out things for customers, which is, I know, bigger than other places like even Roku. Probably bigger than, I don't know if it's bigger than Spotify, okay. But it's a pretty large. But anyway, the point that I'm getting to is figuring out how to solve for marketers the question of where are products discovered digitally and how do you achieve product discovery in a world where visiting retailers, walking down those aisles and finding the new things that you want to buy on those aisles is becoming a behavior that is, as a percentage of how people discover things, clearly in decline. So if people are discovering things more from Instagram and TikTok than ever before, and digital is the primary way that people find new things that they're interested in, the question is, can we become the underlying software and capabilities for major retailers like Macy's and Saks Fifth Ave and Aldi and many others, Williams Sonoma, where they can onboard, we can onboard all of their product level feeds of all of their products, their pricing, their inventory availability. Stitcher Ads was born out of, the name was born out of the fact that most of that data sits in different databases in different areas of those large retailers. You can't find a database that has inventory availability, pricing, the image of the product, the 4 or 5 star rating out of that product, and whether that price and whether that product is being promoted in some kind of digital catalog, digital circular for the week. None of that sits in a single database. So you have to effectively find the different parts of these large retail organizations, ingest that data, put it into a unified database, build effectively a product, a dynamic product catalog, and then you have to pump that via API into Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, TikTok, and Pinterest. And if you can do that well and optimize using their algorithms and data against what you understand are the key products that the retailer is trying to promote into a holistic product that is this beautiful catalog that consumers come across when they're in those social environments, that lead them to actually purchase, as measured by both the offline and online conversion APIs that those platforms enable you to actually see as a API partner of them. What you can prove is that you can build a dynamic product catalog that drives purchase, both offline and online purchase, and you can do so in a way that creates an always-on opportunity for them to actually grow their overall sales business off of your capabilities.
Okay, so I have to interrupt you because I still don't know what your product does. So who's the customer, the retailer?
So the customer is the retailer.
Okay, so the retailer pays you for this really nice-looking feed that goes into social platforms to advertise products?
So the retailer pays us to drive performance lift using offline and online conversion. And to achieve that performance lift, there's a combination of ingesting all of their products, pricing, et cetera, and doing the optimizations based upon the feedback loop for online and offline conversion APIs, with the fact that we can actually cobble together those key signals to drive into those social platforms to see the purchase lift that they're looking for. So before us, if you're using the native tools and not the APIs, you're getting basically a white background with a single product, potentially right, with price, but it doesn't drive. And you're putting your entire product catalog into that. You're not creating subcatalogs and running catalog, let's say catalog around home care versus bathroom versus, you know, home improvement, outdoor home improvement. You're not putting those against each other and figuring out what's driving the highest level of lift for a large, let's say, home goods or home repair company. So we are in charge of the optimization. We're in charge of driving that dynamic product catalog. We're in charge of ingesting all of their data to actually produce the product level SKU experience inside of the social platforms. And we're in charge of all of the day-to-day optimization, typically, to actually drive the best outcomes for those retailers when the entire system is working properly.
Right. Okay, great. Let's move on to a lightning round. So relatively quick questions, relatively quick answers. So what's your biggest challenge?
It's been very hard scaling the company. You know, we would like to be much more aggressive delivering value overseas, both Latin America, Europe, and Asia, and getting the formula right to actually export all the tech and capabilities that we've built here so that it runs on a global basis has been a real challenge. And also pivoting internally, you know, we did one thing really well, which is mobile high impact brand ads, building performance, going to desktop, moving into CTV, running commerce, and having all of those pieces run together. So when I bought Stitcher Ads, it runs on just social. Of course, I want to see that same product catalog run really beautifully on the open web. And I want to pump in those same product catalog attributes, those dynamic products, into a CTV format that works beautifully on TV. So think of it as a feeds-based CTV capabilities that we would drive to retailers and even the retail media network. So you're getting that lift from all of these acquisitions that we've made and making sort of it all work together. Getting that to actually happen is a huge pain in my ass.
Yeah. Okay, next question. Why won't the big guys like Google and Amazon, et cetera, crush you?
Well, funny enough, we're actually building a lot of tech for Google and Amazon because maybe it's stuff that they don't want to invest in. Maybe they have too much bureaucracy. Maybe they're so focused on their race to AI that a lot of their resources are being pulled off of the bread and butter of their core business to race against these other functionality or capabilities that they want to win on. And so it's amazing. The stuff that actually drives the revenue, that's the boring stuff. I think a lot of these very large companies, they underinvest in those areas because they're always chasing the next big thing to drive, you know, Wall Street perception around their market power and their market value. So in areas like advertising, which is not so sexy to Meta, not so sexy to Google anymore, which is crazy, especially if they're being broken up. And even we've seen with Amazon, with the deprecation of Seismic and what they're trying to do, we've seen, you know, a significant amount of underinvestment in those areas.
Got it. Last question. If cargo was an animal, what animal would it be?
A leopard, because we're always running at the next thing. We're super fast and we're trying to grab that prey.
All right, Leopard. Harry Kargman, CEO of Cargo, thank you for being here.
Thanks so much. Really enjoyed coming on the show and thrilled to talk with you and have a chat.
Thanks for listening. New interviews are added every week at Marketecture.tv and your favorite podcasting app.